Hello everyone, I'm delighted to be here today for this webinar to discuss the Hong Kong Stock Exchange's SPAC consultation paper, which was published on the 17th of September 2021. Before I start discussing the SPAC consultation paper, there's some terminology that I will be using throughout the webinar that's specific to SPACs that you'll need to be familiar with. First, a de-SPAC target is a private company with business operations that is the target company of the de-SPAC transaction. Second, a de-SPAC transaction. This is a business combination between the SPAC and a de-SPAC target that, if successful, results in the listing of a successor company. Thirdly, a successor company. This is the listed company that results from a successful de-SPAC transaction. The key people in relation to a SPAC are the SPAC promoters. A SPAC promoter is normally a professional manager, usually with private equity, corporate finance, and/or industry experience, who establishes and manages a SPAC. The SPAC promoter is ultimately the deal maker, in that the SPAC promoter is tasked with identifying a suitable de-SPAC target, negotiating the terms of the de-SPAC transaction, and seeing to the successful completion of a de-SPAC transaction. The key proposals under the SPAC consultation paper relate to key stages of the life cycle of the SPAC, which are the period prior to the de-SPAC transaction, that's the period prior to the business combination between the SPAC and the de-SPAC target, the de-SPAC transaction itself, the liquidation and delisting at the end of its life of the SPAC. The Hong Kong Exchange has highlighted that Hong Kong is a jurisdiction may provide SPACs with a competitive advantage. According to the SPAC consultation paper, as at July 2021, there were 25 SPACs with headquarters in Greater China, which are listed in the US. Of these 25 SPACs, 20 of them are headquartered in Hong Kong, while 5 are headquartered in mainland China. These 25 SPACs collectively raised approximately $4.2 billion. The Hong Kong Exchange says in the consultation paper that if SPACs which focus on finding a Greater China target were able to list in Hong Kong, this may also assist to ensure that the SPAC targets choose Hong Kong as their preferred listing venue. In addition, in the past 3 years, 12 companies with a combined market cap as at July 2021 of approximately 26 billion Hong Kong dollars have listed in the US via a de-SPAC transaction. Of these 12 companies, 2 were headquartered in Hong Kong, 8 in mainland China, and 2 were headquartered in Singapore. So Hong Kong's geographical location and its close proximity to mainland China and Southeast Asia may provide SPACs from these regions with an attractive alternative to the US. Aimed at ensuring the quality and reputation of the Hong Kong listing market, the Hong Kong listing rules prevent the creation and maintenance of shell companies and the circumvention of IPO requirements, including qualitative and quantitative criteria for listing, through the injection of substandard assets and/or businesses into listed shells. In particular, under the current Hong Kong Exchange listing rules, listing applicants are not considered suitable for listing if their assets consist wholly or partly or substantially of cash or short-term investments. This prevents listing applicants using cash or short-term investments to acquire and/or commence new businesses that are not suitable for listing, and by doing so, circumventing the Hong Kong Exchange's listing requirements. Listing applicants seeking to list on the exchange must also demonstrate a trading record of at least three financial years for the main board. The Hong Kong Exchange will consider a listing applicant's proven track record and use it to evaluate the substance, viability and sustainability of the listing applicant's business. And to warrant a listed company's continued listing, it has to carry out on a continuous basis business with a sufficient level of operations and assets of sufficient value to support these operations, failing which the trading of its securities may be suspended until the matter is remedied within a stipulated timeframe. A listed company's listing status may also be cancelled if it fails to do this within the stipulated timeframe. The Hong Kong Exchange has raised concerns in respect of the management of SPACs. In this regard, the exchange is concerned that SPAC promoters may lack the knowledge and experience required to find an acquisition target that can provide SPAC investors with a good return on their investment. The Hong Kong Exchange is also concerned that the SPAC promoters may deliberately mislead investors as to the extent of their abilities, with fraudsters attempting to fabricate, exaggerate, or hide facts about their backgrounds while presenting themselves as successful professionals to entice investors, or falsely misrepresenting the success or accomplishment of certain SPAC promoters. The Hong Kong Exchange is concerned not only with the quality of management, but also continuity of management. The exchange says that SPAC promoters will typically have the knowledge and experience of managing listed companies and the industry to which a de-SPAC target belongs, and will hold promoters' shares, which will give them an economic interest in the successor company. Consequently, the promoters may take on a management role in the successor company. Where this is not the case, or where the composition of the board of a de-SPAC target changes substantially after the de-SPAC transaction, its historical financial track record becomes a less reliable indicator of its future performance. This is because its new management team was not responsible for any previous financial track records. Uncertainty therefore arises as to whether they would be able to improve upon or replicate that track record. The Hong Kong Exchange says that in a traditional IPO, meeting the market capitalization threshold under Chapter 8 of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules, currently at least 500 million for main board applicants listing under the profit criteria by a listing applicant, is demonstrated through price determination of offered shares over the book building process. However, this sort of book building is not required for a de-SPAC transaction, and valuation of a de-SPAC target is instead negotiated and agreed between the de-SPAC target and the SPAC promoter. And according to the exchange, the valuation should be validated by an outside third party or independent investors. The exchange explains that the lack of public book building may mean that the transaction may be more susceptible to deliberate attempts for overvaluation or for circumventing or artificially meeting market capitalization requirements, and may therefore result in listing of substandard businesses or assets. The exchange has stated that the proposed SPAC listing regime in Hong Kong is aimed at striking a balance between providing the potential competitive benefits of listing SPACs on the exchange while mitigating against the potential risks associated with SPACs. The proposed Hong Kong SPAC listing regime is said to be tailored specifically to the Hong Kong market. The aim is to ensure that the SPACs have experienced and reputable SPAC promoters and seek good quality SPAC targets. So a number of the proposals contained in the SPAC consultation paper are, quote, designed to provide a high entry point for SPAC listing applicants and de-SPAC targets, unquote. The Hong Kong Exchange proposes that prior to completion of the de-SPAC transaction, that the subscription and trading of a SPAC securities be limited to professional investors only, including both institutional and individual professional investors as defined under the Securities and Futures Professional Investors Rules. That is, an individual with a portfolio of not less than 8 million Hong Kong dollars, or a corporation or partnership with a portfolio of not less than 8 million, or total assets of not less than 40 million Hong Kong dollars. However, the professional investor restrictions will not apply to the successor company. The trading of the securities of the successor company will be open to everyone on the same basis as in respect of a traditional IPO. To ensure that the securities of a SPAC are marketed to or traded only by professional investors, the exchange proposes that the board lot size and subscription size of SPAC shares should have a value of at least 1 million Hong Kong dollars. Intermediaries selling securities for and on behalf of the SPAC must satisfy themselves that each placee is a professional investor through their established Know Your Client procedures, and the SPAC would need to demonstrate to the exchange that all other aspects of the structure of any SPAC securities offering will prevent access to investors other than professional investors. Also, the exchange proposes to implement certain measures to limit participation in respect of secondary trading of the SPAC securities. These measures include an intermediary approval process, ongoing monitoring, enforcement actions by the exchange where there is a breach by an intermediary, and assigning a special stock short name marker to the stock short names of the SPAC securities. The exchange has raised a concern that if SPAC units, that being a unit of SPAC shares and SPAC warrants stapled together, are separated into SPAC shares and SPAC warrants immediately after the commencement of listing of the SPAC, this may result in a disorderly market due to sudden changes in the volatility of the share prices owing to the unique nature of SPACs. With respect to the separate trading of SPAC shares and SPAC warrants, the exchange has proposed two options in the consultation paper and seeks feedback from the market on these two options. The proposal under option one is to only allow manual trades on SPAC warrants. This would require that the professional investor who wishes to trade their SPAC warrant would be required to request quotes from the intermediary. If transacted, the intermediary acting as agent or counterparty would then report the transaction to the exchange as per the current manual trade reporting requirements. Post-trade transparency of the transaction would remain the same, but there would be no automation of this process and no pre-trade transparency of the orders in the central limit order book. Option two provides more flexibility and is a combination of auto-matching and manual trading. Under this option, it's proposed to allow both auto-matching of orders with volatility control mechanisms and manual trades on SPAC securities. Auto-matching of trading orders and manual trades for SPAC securities would be permitted. However, trading with auto-matching would be subject to the exchange's volatility control mechanism. With the proposed professional investor restriction to be applied prior to completion of the de-SPAC transaction, the number of investors who are eligible and willing to subscribe for the securities in the SPAC will be smaller than compared to a traditional IPO. The exchange is of the opinion that listing high-quality SPACs that have experienced and reputable SPAC promoters will attract large commitments from investors. To achieve these aims, while also imposing the professional investor restrictions, the exchange has proposed that SPACs raise at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars in funds from their initial offering. The exchange acknowledges that under these proposals, the number of investors is likely to be smaller than it would be for a SPAC regime that does not place such an emphasis on quality. In respect of the open requirements, the exchange proposes that SPACs must distribute SPAC shares and SPAC warrants to a minimum of 75 professional investors, of which 30 must be institutional professional investors. SPACs must distribute at least 75% of each of SPAC shares and SPAC warrants to institutional professional investors. To ensure that there's an open market for the SPAC securities, the exchange proposes that the current requirements under the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules 8081 and 8083 be applied. These require that not more than 50% of securities in public hands at the time of the SPAC's listing can be beneficially owned by the three largest public shareholders. At least 25% of a SPAC's total number of issued SPAC shares and at least 25% of its SPAC warrants must be held by the public. These requirements would apply on an ongoing basis. In addition to the proposed open market requirements, the exchange proposes that there should be a minimum fundraising size of 1 billion Hong Kong dollars and that shares in the SPAC should be issued at no less than $10 per share. The exchange says that a minimum fundraising size will validate the reputation of the SPAC promoters and will illustrate to the market that professional investors have faith in the ability of the SPAC promoters to successfully negotiate and complete a de-SPAC transaction on the best possible terms. The Hong Kong Exchange adds that the minimum fundraising size this will assist in ensuring that the de-SPAC transactions are sufficiently big enough to result in successor companies that will meet the minimum market cap requirements for listing on the exchange. The exchange considers that the share price of a SPAC is likely to be driven by speculation and rumor, particularly with regard to finding a suitable de-SPAC target. As such, SPAC warrant prices are likely to be more volatile than that of SPAC shares, And when exercised, promoter warrants and SPAC warrants will dilute the number of SPAC shares in issue. So it's proposed that the existing Hong Kong Exchange listing rules in respect of warrants, as set out in Chapter 15 and Practice Note 4 of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules, are modified for SPAC warrants and promoter warrants. And these modifications would include that the promoter warrants and SPAC warrants must expire not less than 1 and not more than 5 years from the date of completion of a de-SPAC transaction. Promoter warrants and SPAC warrants must not be convertible into further rights to subscribe for securities which expire less than 1 year or more than 5 years after the date of completion of a de-SPAC transaction. Conditions to be imposed in respect of material terms of the warrants and which must be disclosed in the listing document of the SPAC include a limit on the number of securities to be issued on exercise, the exercise period and price, arrangements on transfer and the variation in the subscription or purchase price or the number of securities, and the rights of the holder on liquidation of the SPAC. Where a term of the promoter warrants and SPAC warrants is altered after issue or grant, the alteration must be approved by the stock exchange, except where such alterations take effect automatically under the terms of the warrants. Any alteration must also comply with Practice Note 4 of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules, including the requirement for approval by shareholders. Promoter warrants and SPAC warrants will only be exercisable after the completion of a de-SPAC transaction. In addition to these modifications, the exchange proposes that in respect of promoter warrants, these may not be issued at less than fair value and must not contain terms more favourable than the terms of the SPAC warrants. This is aimed at reducing the risk of a misalignment of interests between SPAC promoters and SPAC shareholders. Unlike traditional IPOs, SPACs do not have a track record, and the exchange says that SPACs differentiate themselves from traditional IPOs based on the experience and the reputation of the SPAC promoter, which the investor will rely on when deciding whether or not to invest in the SPAC. In respect of SPAC promoters, the exchange proposes that it must be satisfied as to the character, experience, and integrity of each SPAC promoter, and that each SPAC promoter is capable of meeting a standard of competence commensurate with their position. The exchange will publish guidance in respect of the required information in relation to the experience of the SPAC promoter. This required information must be provided to the exchange for assessment of the suitability of the SPAC promoter and must be disclosed in the listing document of the SPAC. The Hong Kong Exchange states that it will reserve the right to request that a SPAC provide such further information regarding any proposed SPAC promoter's character, experience, and integrity. The guidance will say that the exchange will view favorably a SPAC promoter who can demonstrate that they have experience managing assets with an average collective value of at least 8 billion Hong Kong dollars over a continuous period of at least 3 financial years, or holding a senior executive position, for example, chief executive of a Hong Kong Exchange listed company that is or has been a constituent of the Hang Seng Index or an equivalent flagship index. The Hong Kong Exchange further proposes that at the time of listing and during the life cycle of a SPAC, at least one SPAC promoter must be a firm that holds an SFC license to carry out Type 6, that's advising on corporate finance, and or Type 9, that's asset management regulated activity. And that the SPAC promoter must beneficially hold at least 10% of the promoter's shares. SPAC directors will be required to meet the current requirements in respect of directors set out in the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. These requirements include requirements in relation to the SPAC directors' fiduciary duties, their character, experience, and integrity. In addition, a majority of the SPAC directors must be officers as defined in the Securities and Futures Ordinance of the SPAC promoters, both licensed and unlicensed, representing the respective SPAC promoters who nominate them. The exchange aims to ensure that SPAC promoters are held accountable for the performance of the SPAC and that the SPAC directors have fiduciary duties of skill, care, and diligence to the SPAC investors and the SPAC as a whole. The Hong Kong Exchange proposes to require 100% of the gross proceeds from a SPAC IPO excluding the funds raised from the issue of promoter shares and promoter warrants, to be held in a ring-fenced trust account in Hong Kong. The exchange proposes that the trust account be operated by a trustee or custodian that meets the qualification criteria set out in Chapter 4 of the SFC's Code on Unit Trusts and Mutual Funds, and must operate the account in a manner that's consistent with Chapter 4 of the Unit Trust Code. The requirements set out in Chapter 4 of the Unit Trust Code in respect of a trustee or custodian are very narrow. The effect is that only a bank licensed under the Banking Ordinance, a registered trust company registered under the Trustee Ordinance, that is, a subsidiary of a bank licensed under the Banking Ordinance, or a trust company that is a trustee of a registered MPF scheme under the Mandatory Provident Funds Schemes Ordinance, would qualify. The proceeds deposited with the trustee custodian will need to be held in cash or cash equivalent. The funds and any interest earned on these funds that are held in trust will only be released in certain circumstances, to meet any redemption requests, to complete a de-SPAC transaction, or to return funds to SPAC shareholders in accordance with SPAC provisions under the proposed listing rules. The SPAC promoter is allocated promoter shares, which are used to incentivize the SPAC promoter to successfully complete a de-SPAC transaction. The SPAC promoter will purchase these shares for a nominal amount, which will convert into SPAC shares at the time of the de-SPAC transaction. Additionally, the SPAC promoter will normally purchase SPAC warrants to cover the underwriting fees of the SPAC's initial offering, other expenses associated with the offering, and the expenses required to search for a de-SPAC target. The exchange proposes that restrictions be placed on the transfer of the promoter shares and promoter warrants, and that only SPAC promoters be permitted to beneficially hold promoter shares and promoter warrants at the time of listing of the SPAC and thereafter. To this end, the exchange proposes that the promoter shares and promoter warrants will not be eligible for listing, and the SPAC will be required not to certify the transfer of legal ownership of any promoter shares or promoter warrants. To protect against what the exchange believes is a heightened risk of insider dealing in respect of the securities of the SPAC, the exchange proposes that a SPAC promoter, including its directors and employees, SPAC directors and the SPAC employees, including their respective associates, will be prohibited from dealing in SPAC securities prior to the completion of the de-SPAC transaction. The exchange proposes to apply its current trading halt and suspension policy to SPACs. The exchange is of the opinion that this approach will maximize the trading time of the SPAC securities while still providing the shareholders with the necessary protection from uneven distribution and inside information. The definition of inside information under Section 307A of the SFO will be applicable. The exchange will expect SPACs to adopt measures to preserve confidentiality of information, and the SPAC will be required to meet the requirements of Part 14A, Disclosure of Information of the SFO. Where the SPAC has a reasonable belief or that it is reasonably likely that confidential information may have been lost in respect of inside information regarding the de-SPAC transaction negotiations, the SPAC will be required to apply to the exchange as soon as reasonably practicable for a trading halt where an announcement cannot be made promptly. The exchange has said that it will only agree to a trading halt where it appears that there is a reasonable concern the inside information has been leaked and or practical difficulty in maintaining the confidentiality of such confidential information. As I mentioned earlier, the de-SPAC transaction is a business combination between the SPAC and a de-SPAC target that, if successful, results in the listing of a successor company. The exchange proposes to consider the successor company in the same way as it does a reverse takeover, that being a deemed new listing on the exchange. Therefore, sponsored due diligence requirements, amongst other requirements, will apply. The exchange is of the view that this approach will ensure that the quantitative and qualitative requirements that are applicable to a new listing will not be circumvented by the successor company. The exchange says that this will guard against the quality and reputation of the Hong Kong market being compromised. The exchange proposes that the new listing requirements, which will apply to new listings from the 1st of January 2022, will be applicable to de-SPAC transactions. Therefore, the successor company will be required to meet all the listing requirements under the exchange's listing rules, including the minimum market cap requirements, the financial eligibility tests, and the management and ownership continuity requirements. The exchange does not require the de-SPAC target to separately meet financial eligibility tests, as is the case under the current RTO rules, given that the SPACs themselves are in fact a cash shell without any financial track record. That is, it would be sufficient for the successor company to meet all new listing requirements. The exchange proposes that the successor company appoint at least one IPO sponsor, independent of both the SPAC and the successor company, to assist with its listing application in accordance with Chapter 3A of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. The IPO sponsor must be formally appointed by the successor company at least 2 months prior to listing. I'll call this period the minimum engagement period. In circumstances where a listing applicant simultaneously considers an application for a traditional IPO and a listing via a SPAC, the exchange will take into account the due diligence performed by the IPO sponsor during the entire dual track record period for the purposes of considering whether the minimum engagement period has been met by the successor company. The SPAC would be required to provide sufficient information to the exchange to demonstrate that the successor company meets the listing track record requirements, including the financial information in respect of the de-SPAC target based on an accountant's report. The IPO sponsor must carry out the due diligence such that it's capable of making the declaration that, amongst other things, the successor company is in compliance with all conditions of listing under Chapter 8 of the exchange's listing rules. That's the qualifications for listing. And the successor company's listing document contains sufficient information to enable a reasonable person to form a valid and justifiable opinion in respect of the financial condition and the profitability of the successor company. An announcement in respect of the de-SPAC transaction will be required to be made as soon as practicable once the terms have been finalized. This announcement must contain all information required by the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules for transactions and RTOs, be submitted to the exchange prior to publication and must not be published until the exchange has no further comments, state the expected date that the listing document will be issued. In addition to these requirements, the exchange proposes that the de-SPAC transaction must comply with all other applicable Hong Kong Exchange listing rule requirements applicable to notifiable transactions. The exchange proposes that the de-SPAC transaction must comply with the procedures and requirements that are applicable to new listing applicants as set out in Chapter 9 of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. That's the application procedures and requirements. These include that the SPAC submit an application for listing, a Form A1, that is to be completed by the IPO sponsor together with an advance proof, a substantially complete listing document. The listing document must not be issued until the exchange has confirmed it has no further comments. And in addition, the listing document must contain all the information that it would be required to contain for a new listing on the exchange and for an RTO, and must be sent to shareholders either at the time notice of general meeting is given to approve the de-SPAC transaction or prior to such notice. The listing document must also satisfy the prospectus requirements under the company's winding up and miscellaneous provisions ordinance. The exchange proposes that the terms of the de-SPAC transaction must include a condition that the de-SPAC transaction must not be completed unless the successor company has been given approval for listing on the Hong Kong Exchange. The Hong Kong Exchange proposes that an investment company under Chapter 21 of the exchange's rules would not be an eligible de-SPAC target, whilst biotech companies and mineral companies will be eligible, provided that these companies comply with applicable requirements. In addition, a SPAC may also become a successor company with weighted voting rights, provided the applicable requirements under the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules are met. To help ensure that the de-SPAC targets are businesses with sufficient substance to justify a listing on the exchange, the exchange proposes to require that the de-SPAC target have a fair market value of at least 80% of the funds raised by the SPAC at its initial offering prior to any redemptions. The exchange is seeking views from the market as to whether the SPAC should be required to use a certain portion of its net proceeds raised as consideration for a de-SPAC transaction. In particular, the exchange is concerned that if the successor company is permitted to retain all or a substantial amount of these funds, it will become a cash company, which is not considered suitable for listing on the exchange under the existing listing regime. However, the exchange understands that its market practice for the consideration for a de-SPAC transaction to be predominantly settled through payment in shares. The exchange recognizes that imposing such requirements may put the successor company at a disadvantage vis-a-vis a company which lists via a traditional IPO. The exchange proposes to make it a requirement that a SPAC obtains funds from outside third-party investment for the purposes of completing a de-SPAC transaction. The exchange believes that independent investment will mitigate against risk of artificial valuations of the de-SPAC target. To this extent, it's proposed that funds raised by third-party investors will have to constitute at least 25% of the expected market capitalization of the successor company. However, the exchange may accept a lower threshold of between 15 to 25%, where the expected market capitalization of the successor company is in excess of 1.5 billion at the time of listing. In addition to these requirements, the exchange proposes to require that at least one independent investor be either an asset management firm of at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars or a fund with a fund size of at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars. The investments made by these firms must result in them beneficially owning at least 5% of the issued shares of the successor company as at the date of its listing. To determine the independence of an investor, the exchange proposes to apply the same criteria it uses to determine the independence of an independent financial advisor under Rule 1384 of the exchange's listing rules. Currently, under the exchange's listing rule 1502, securities issuable upon the exercise of warrants must not exceed 20% of the number of the listed company's shares in issue. In addition, under the exchange listing rule 7.27b, there's a cap on the value of shareholdings following a rights issue, open offer, or specific mandate placing. A listed company on the exchange may not undertake any of these corporate actions where such action would result in a theoretical dilution effect of 25% or more. In respect of SPACs, the exchange proposes that the SPAC will have to disclose the dilution in number and value to non-redeeming SPAC shareholders that may occur if the transaction is approved and completed. In addition, the listing document issued for the de-SPAC transaction must contain the dilution effect of the de-SPAC transaction to the number and value of the holdings of non-redeeming SPAC shareholders. In respect of the dilution cap, the exchange seeks feedback on whether a dilution cap on the maximum possible dilution from the conversion of promoter shares and the exercise of warrants issued by a SPAC is appropriate. To the extent that the dilution is deemed appropriate, the exchange proposes to prohibit a SPAC from issuing promoter shares to SPAC investors, which represent more than 20% of the total number of shares the SPAC has in issue at the date of its listing. And if the promoter shares are convertible into SPAC shares, such conversion will be on a one-to-one basis only. SPAC warrants and promoter shares which entitle a holder thereof to more than a third of a share upon their exercise, and warrants in aggregate that if immediately exercised, whether or not such exercise is permissible, result in the issue of shares, a number that is greater than 30% of the number of shares that are in issue at the time that these warrants are issued, and promoter shares that if they were immediately exercised, whether or not that exercise is permissible, result in the issue of shares of a number that's greater than 10% of the number of shares in issue at the time that the warrants are issued. The exchange has said that they would be willing to accept requests to issue additional promoter shares to SPAC promoters after completion of the de-SPAC transaction, subject to conditions that the total number of promoter shares, including these shares, which we'll call the earnout portion, would represent an amount of not more than 30% of the total number of shares that are in issue at the time of the SPAC listing. The earnout portion must be linked to an objective performance target or targets, which should not be determined by changes in the price or trading volume in the successor company's shares. And at the general meeting to approve the de-SPAC transaction, the SPAC shareholders, the earnout portion is approved, and the earnout portion must be included in the resolution approving the de-SPAC transaction. In addition, the Hong Kong Exchange proposes that a SPAC must not grant any anti-dilution rights to a SPAC promoter that would result in the SPAC promoter holding more than the number of promoter shares that they held as at the date of listing of the SPAC. The Hong Kong Exchange also proposes that a de-SPAC transaction should be made conditional on receiving approval from the independent shareholders at a duly convened general meeting. Where a shareholder has a material interest in the relevant resolution, it's proposed that the shareholder, including the shareholder's close associates, abstain from voting. So as a result, the SPAC promoters and their close associates will be unable to vote, and where any de-SPAC transaction will result in a change of control, any outgoing controlling shareholders and their close associates must not vote in favour of the resolutions. In addition, the terms of any outside investment, including independent third-party investment, which has been obtained for the purpose of completing a de-SPAC transaction, must be included in the relevant resolution or resolutions that are the subject of the shareholder vote at the general meeting. The Hong Kong Exchange perceives that there is to be a high risk that the valuation of a de-SPAC target and the successor company may not be genuine and may be manufactured to meet new listing requirements where the de-SPAC transactions involve connected targets. Having said that, the exchange acknowledges that a complete prohibition on connected transactions is unnecessarily restrictive and proposes to allow such transactions where certain conditions are met. These conditions include applying Chapter 14A of the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules to SPACs with an expanded definition of connected person to include certain people and their associates. These are the SPAC promoters, the SPAC's trustee or custodian, the SPAC directors. A de-SPAC transaction will be considered a connected transaction if it may confer benefits on any of these parties I've just mentioned through their interests in the entities which are involved in the transaction. In addition to receiving the independent shareholder approval, the SPAC will be required to comply with the provisions of the exchange's listing rules 14A32 to 14A48, which are applicable to connected transactions. Under these exchange listing rules, the SPAC will, among other things, have to establish an independent board committee to advise the SPAC shareholders on certain aspects of the connected transaction, which include whether the terms of the transaction are fair and reasonable, whether the connected transaction is in the interests of the SPAC and its shareholders, and how to vote on the connected transaction. In addition, the SPAC will be required to appoint an IFA, independent financial advisor, acceptable to the exchange, to make recommendations to the independent board and the shareholders on the connected transaction requirements. The circular sent to shareholders in respect of the de-SPAC transaction must include a letter from the independent board committee containing its opinion on the connected transaction requirements and conforming with relevant Hong Kong Exchange listing rule requirements, and a letter from the IFA containing its opinion and recommendation. The IFA is required to meet all the applicable Hong Kong Exchange listing rules. In addition to the requirements I've just talked about, a SPAC must also demonstrate minimal conflicts of interest exist in relation to the proposed acquisition and demonstrate with support that the proposed connected transaction will be concluded at arm's length. Evidence in support may include demonstrating that the SPAC and its connected persons are not controlling shareholders of the de-SPAC target, demonstrating that no cash consideration is being paid to connected persons, and that any consideration shares issued to connected persons would be made subject to a lockup period of 12 months And in all cases, an independent valuation will be required, which must be included in the circular to shareholders. A key aspect of SPACs is the ability of shareholders to redeem their shares in the SPAC on the happening of certain trigger events. To align shareholder voting and shareholder requirements, the exchange proposes that only those shareholders who vote against one of the following trigger events may redeem their shares in the SPAC. Firstly, a material change in the SPAC promoter managing a SPAC or the eligibility and or suitability of a SPAC promoter. Secondly, a de-SPAC transaction. And thirdly, a proposal to extend the de-SPAC announcement deadline or the de-SPAC transaction deadline. The exchange is of the view that such a mechanism would provide a meaningful check on the reasonableness of the terms of a proposed transaction and would assist to curb abusive market practices such as overvaluation. This is a redemption right as proposed and would only be available to shareholders who vote against one of the trigger events. So a shareholder who votes in favour of the de-SPAC transaction would not have a redemption right, as the exchange considers that this would help to ensure that interests of non-redeeming shareholders are not prejudiced by votes cast by persons whose interests are not aligned with their own. SPAC shareholders who redeem their SPAC shares will still be entitled to keep the associated SPAC warrants they hold to compensate them for the lack of return on their investment held in trust prior to completion of the de-SPAC transaction. The exchange proposes to make it mandatory for SPACs to provide a redemption option. It's proposed that redeeming shareholders be entitled to receive a pro rata amount of 100% of the funds raised at the initial offering to be redeemed at the price the shares were issued plus accrued interest. Expenses incurred by the SPAC promoter for its establishment and maintenance will not be recoverable if the de-SPAC transaction is not completed. This, the exchange believes, will better align the interests of the SPAC promoters and the SPAC shareholders who don't redeem their shares. Shareholders who purchase the SPAC shares on the secondary market at a premium to the listing price won't be able to recover their investment in full. It's proposed that SPACs will be prevented from imposing a limit on the number of shares a SPAC shareholder can redeem. The exchange says that this is aimed at ensuring that a SPAC shareholder can recover their initial investment where the shareholder votes against the resolutions in respect of a trigger event. This will ensure that voting is not influenced by redemption requests. Where a general offer obligation is triggered under the SFC's codes on takeovers and mergers and share buybacks, it's the takeovers code, the SPAC will be prevented from offering a premium to some shareholders, but not all. With respect to redemptions in relation to a de-SPAC transaction, the redemptions will be subject to the completion of the de-SPAC transaction. These redemptions and the return of the relevant funds will have to be completed within 5 business days of the completion of the de-SPAC transaction. Where the de-SPAC transaction is not completed, the funds will remain in trust for the purposes of listing an alternative de-SPAC target at a later date. In the case of a vote in respect of either a material change in the SPAC promoter managing a SPAC or the eligibility and or suitability of a SPAC promoter or a proposal to extend the de-SPAC announcement deadline or the de-SPAC transaction deadline, the redemption and the return of funds must happen within 1 month of the date of the relevant general meeting. The exchange proposes that the current requirements in respect of forward-looking statements should not be lowered for disclosures concerning a SPAC's IPO and de-SPAC transactions. Therefore, these statements should be formulated on a reasonable basis and be verified by independent persons to the extent required for a traditional IPO. Therefore, in line with the Hong Kong Exchange's Listing Rule 1116, a listing document in respect of a de-SPAC transaction may only refer to future profits or contain dividend forecasts based on an assumed future level of profits, where these are supported by a formal profit forecast. Unlike restrictions on the marketing and trading of SPAC shares, the trading of the successor company's shares will not be limited to professional investors. However, because the offer of SPAC shares will be limited to professional investors only, SPACs are likely to have a smaller shareholder base, and therefore the exchange proposes that the minimum shareholder base threshold should be lowered to at least 100 rather than the usual 300 under the Hong Kong Exchange's listing rules. The exchange proposes that the successor company must raise at least 1 billion Hong Kong dollars in its initial offering and attract independent investment of up to 25% of the successor company's market capitalization. The exchange is of the view that these requirements will assist in ensuring that the successor company is a relatively large listed company whose size may mitigate against the risk of substantial market volatility in the trading of its shares on listing. To mitigate against the risks of price volatility and liquidity that's associated with a smaller shareholding base, it's proposed that certain Hong Kong exchange listing requirements will also apply. A 25% public float requirement must be met at all times, and not more than 50% of the securities of a successor company in public hands can be beneficially owned by the three largest public shareholders, as at the date of the successor company's listing. The exchange proposes that SPAC promoters be subject to a lockup period of 12 months in respect of their holdings in the successor company from the date of completion of the de-SPAC transaction. In addition, promoter warrants will not be exercisable during this period. In addition to the proposed SPAC promoter lockup period, the exchange proposes a lockup period in respect of the controlling shareholders. To this extent, the exchange proposes that the restrictions imposed on controlling shareholders under the existing Hong Kong Exchange listing rules be imposed on controlling shareholders of a successor company. This means that a controlling shareholder of a successor company won't be allowed to dispose of their holdings in the successor company within the first 6 months of the listing of the successor company and won't be allowed to dispose of their holdings in the successor company within the second 6 months following the listing if the disposal would result in the controlling shareholder ceasing to be a controlling shareholder. The Takeovers Code applies to the takeovers, mergers, etc., affecting companies listed on the Hong Kong Exchange. The Takeover Code generally applies irrespective of the country of incorporation or the location or management or place of the business and assets. It's expected that all SPACs listed on the exchange will be primary listed, and therefore prima facie the Takeover Code would apply. The exchange says that the application of the Takeover Code will ensure that during a change in control, shareholders during the period will be afforded the same treatment and will be provided with an exit opportunity. In respect to the application of the Takeover Code to SPACs, there are three stages in the life of the SPAC to which the Takeovers Code could apply. That's obviously prior to the de-SPAC transaction, the de-SPAC transaction itself, and the successor company. The exchange proposes that the Takeovers Code should apply to a SPAC during the SPAC period. That's the period during which the SPAC remains listed until the completion of the de-SPAC transaction. The exchange cited certain key reasons. Despite the fact that offers prior to the completion of the de-SPAC transaction are unlikely, to have a period of up to 36 months without the application of the Takeovers Code would not be satisfactory, and opportunistic behavior may be prevalent if unregulated offers would be allowed during that period. As SPACs will have a primary listing on the exchange, they should be subject to the Takeovers Code, and a broad waiver from the application of the Takeovers Code during this period wouldn't be appropriate. And while the redemption of shares by SPAC shareholders under the exchange's proposals may fall under the definition of an exempt share buyback under the Takeovers Code on share buybacks, the code on buybacks will provide protection to the SPAC shareholders if a SPAC wishes to conduct buyback transactions outside the redemption regime. The exchange proposes that where a de-SPAC transaction results in the owner of the de-SPAC target obtaining 30% or more of the voting rights, the application of 26(1) of the Takeovers Code, that's compulsory mandatory offer, would normally be waived. In these circumstances, the owner of the de-SPAC target would need to make a formal application to the SFC for the application of such waiver. In granting the waiver, the factors that would be taken into account by the SFC include the holdings of the owner of the de-SPAC target and parties acting in concert with it in the shares of the SPAC, and any dealings by such people during the SPAC period prior to the announcement of the de-SPAC transaction, and any relationships between the owner of the de-SPAC target and the SPAC promoters and parties acting in concert with any of them. Following completion of the de-SPAC transaction, where a third party obtains control over the successor company, that's 30% or more of the voting rights, or otherwise consolidates control by crossing the 2% creeper threshold of the successor company between 30 and 50%, the SFC would not normally grant a waiver from Rule 26.1 of the Takeovers Code. The exchange has explained that the difference in approaches between granting a waiver to the owner of the de-SPAC target and the refusal to grant a waiver to a third party is because while it can be said that there is a general expectation that the owner of the de-SPAC target will become the controlling shareholder of the successor company, the same can't be said in respect of a third party gaining control of the successor company. The SFC is of the view that the Takeovers Code should apply in full to the successor company, as it's expected to be a typical publicly listed company on the exchange. The exchange proposes certain deadlines for completing a de-SPAC transaction, with the option of an extension. The de-SPAC announcement must be made within 24 months of the date of its listing. The de-SPAC transaction must be completed within 36 months of the date of listing. Failure to meet either of these deadlines would result in immediate suspension of the trading in the SPAC securities. During the trading suspension, the SPAC must return the funds raised from its listing to its shareholders and then liquidate and delist. The exchange proposes that the SPAC may apply for an extension of the announcement deadline or the transaction deadline. To be eligible to apply for such extension, the SPAC must, in the opinion of the exchange, have a valid reason for such request, and must include confirmation that the SPAC has received the approval for the extension by an ordinary resolution of the shareholders at a general meeting. The SPAC promoters and their respective close associates may not vote. A six-month extension is proposed by the exchange. Prior to a vote on the extension of either the announcement deadline or the transaction deadline, shareholders of the SPAC must be given an opportunity to redeem their shares at the redemption price. Where the SPAC fails to meet either the announcement deadline or the de-SPAC transaction deadline, including any extension, or to get the requisite shareholder approval in respect of a material change in SPAC promoters within 1 month from the material change, the exchange will suspend the trading in the securities of the SPAC, and the SPAC must, within 1 month of this suspension, return to its shareholders, excluding the holders of promoter shares, on a pro rata basis, 100% of the funds it raised at its initial offering at the redemption price. The redemption price is the price at which the securities were issued in the SPAC's initial listing, plus any accrued interest. Thereafter, the SPAC must liquidate and, upon liquidation, publish an announcement regarding the liquidation and the cancellation of the listing. Upon completion of the liquidation, the exchange will automatically cancel the SPAC's listing. So that brings me to the conclusion of the formal part of this webinar. Thank you again for joining me today, and I do hope I'll see you again at future webinars. Have a great evening.